Welcome to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, a show dedicated to cybersecurity challenges, solutions, a journey together, not alone. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of MSP 1337. I'm joined again this week by Jim Harriman of Kinetic Technology Group. Welcome, Jim.
Good to be here.
It is, by and large, the most controversial topic, so I'll just say what it is: risk. We could put all kinds of labels on it. It's the conversation we were talking earlier, and I think it's not just talking about the word risk, but what is risk in the context of a managed service provider? How does it impact an organization, and where do you start? And since we started the conversation around our next town hall, which is tied to proactive and reactive risk management, I've been getting bombarded. Everything from articles coming out of CompTIA about how to inherently handle risk to MSP Ignite members asking questions about weighing in on their risk mitigation plan. And so the first thing I want to do is clarify a couple things for the listeners, and that is, a risk mitigation plan or a risk management plan is not the absence of risk or the ability to make risks become zero. It is the ability to understand and score risks and what are you going to do with them so that you can continue to operate. And in the event that an event occurs, knowing that in all likelihood, it will have some sort of negative repercussion to your organization. That's largely how we manage risk. How do you address that? And how do you address that in a way that will put you in a position of it being the least amount of impact you can possibly, and I'll say this word because we all know what it means, tolerate if it were to occur, right? So with all the plans that are out there, one of the things that we know to be true is you've got to do a risk assessment in order to figure any of the pieces out. And that's where you and I got to talking. And we're all very familiar at MSP Ignite and Secure Outcomes with programs around frameworks, right? Like if I'm going to make my business more secure, then CIS or SOC 2 Type 2 or ISO, I mean, you could list frameworks for the next 15 minutes. And all of them have some of the greatest controls out there. Like if you were to hybrid some, I think you would make it a lot easier for a lot of people. Like, hey, we cherry picked from these different control sets and now it's meaningful to me. I understand it. It makes sense because I'm techie and I got all the tech controls in my wheelhouse. So I wanted to highlight that because knowing that you've gone through SOC 2 Type 2, knowing that you're heavily involved with one of the integrator groups that are going through CIS to talk about what is quite honestly a risk assessment in and of itself. And so just kind of share with our listeners your experience of going through that. And for those of you listening, there's other things too. It doesn't have to be a framework, cybersecurity questionnaire for insurance or even interviewing somebody, right? Like there's so many ways you could spend this, but talk to me, Jim, a little bit about your journey of kind of walking into what you kind of in rears discovered, like, hey, this is a risk assessment.
Sure. So when we started, when we made the decision to go ahead and get a SOC 2 audit, one of the requirements asked us if, we have done a risk assessment. And I'm like, well, what does that mean exactly? I mean, I know what a risk assessment is, but I mean, Sure. It's like, but it was just a very blanket statement. Have you done a risk assessment? Yes or no? Well, isn't that kind of what I'm doing right now? Aren't you assessing my risk? And that was my mind. And they're like, yeah, but it's true. What you're doing is assessing some risk here. But so I'm like, man, what am I going to do to start a program internally within my business about risk assessment, right? And what all kind of directions is that going to take? Because I mean, you've got just the risk assessment, you've got the cybersecurity risk assessment, then you've got, vendor risk management, you've got all this different, risk stuff going on that you're trying to get to. So Basically, the insurance company that we work with had a pretty expansive questionnaire. It's funny that you mentioned the cybersecurity because I know we had chatted about that. And I'm like, well, they called this a risk assessment. So if it's good enough for them to underwrite my insurance policy for cybersecurity, then it's a good enough starting point for me. So right. I based my initial risk assessment off of the questionnaire that came from my insurance broker, which was pretty hefty. I mean, it was, you know, 150 some odd questions that I had to answer, which was more than, you know, any other cybersecurity questionnaire I had dealt with or seen from any client that had brought them in. So I'm like, okay, this is a good starting point. So that's where we started. And it covered a lot of things about how we did business with our clients, you know, what our processes and procedures were, which we were also going through building a lot of that out, working with the company on the SOC 2 audit. So it was very similar, but since we had already done that, I used that as my risk assessment for my SOC 2 audit, and it was accepted. They reviewed it and said that this is good. This is something that we can use as a risk assessment, and as you grow it and build upon it, it's a good starting point. The thing that overwhelmed me was I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go out and look at, you know, NIST and see what theirs is. And it was like, you know, 183 page document. And I'm like, oh man.
Made your head spin a little bit. And you're like, this isn't what I was looking for.
Yeah. I mean, there's parts in there that apply and even, you know, funneled down to what we used in going back and actually reading that 200 page document from NIST. I was like, okay, yeah, I see this, but theirs is more about process and roles and responsibilities for larger organizations that didn't really apply to us. And so that's what most of those, you know, hundreds of pages were. And so it was good, and it was a good learning experience, but ultimately I felt like we were on the right track. And once the auditors accepted what we presented to them, that I felt better about it. I was like, they were actually like, well, you know, compared to some of the others that we've seen, this is actually pretty good. So I'm like, okay, I felt better about it.
You know, it's funny as you're going through, you know, as part of risk management, you know, you do the assessment and some of these other pieces. And one of the things that I kept coming across is in my homework for planning for our upcoming town hall is the way to break down what you're doing with risk, right? So you've got avoidance, you've got transfer, you've got accept, and then you have mitigate. And it's funny because mitigate is the word that comes in multiple variations of the word. So you'll see like reduce, you'll see full remediation, where you're basically bringing that down to a zero. And I think a large degree of what we find ourselves doing is playing this black and white game with risk. So we say things like, oh yeah, I transferred that, sort of a black and white. So I transferred it to insurance, right? Like I've allowed insurance to take on that risk. And so that's a little bit of a trivial way of saying it. But like, when I think about understanding risk myself, it's an event is going to occur or has occurred. And this is where we get into proactive and reactive. So just to clarify for people listening, reactive risk management is all about planning for the future based on events that have occurred largely to me. And proactive risk management is taking a bit of what has happened in the past, what is currently happening to the landscape today, and then trying to predict proactively what might happen in the future. And we use lots of different tools to help make those decisions. And then I think there's like even a third one that's more of like more of a flexible model on how to manage risk. But the reality is there's no perfect model for risk management. The kicker is that as an organization, you collectively understand how you're treating risk. And you and I were talking about this before, we're either reducing it, avoiding it, or accepting it. Like those really, if we really want to boil it down, there's really only three.
I agree 100%.
So how are you, like, I think this is where we get into the challenges that solution providers face. I think, quite honestly, it's almost easy to do the risk conversation if you are in a business that produces a product or a service that is largely consumed at their own pace, right? So like if I'm AWS and I provide a cloud service where you can go and consume resources from my platform, that's a pretty confined box of what would be risk to me as AWS versus a solution provider that's like, hey, we make sure they can print, we install software on their computers, we buy their computers for them and deploy them for their environment. Client risk as a part of our internal risk makes this really complicated really fast. And I think this is where we have some stumbling blocks with answering things like insurance questionnaires. And they say things like, what RMM tool do you use? It's like, that's none of their business. Well, quite honestly, it's less about the product that you're using. And it really is more about how do they start identifying what types of services are you providing? Because if you don't have any RMM tools in there, well, you just reduced the tentacles that you have out into your client environments, regardless of who the vendor is. Sure. And so I was just curious, like, how do you walk through that? Because this is probably the most difficult piece from where I sit in understanding and navigating risk as you go about doing your day to day.
Well, I think most of us are going to get to the point where we have identified what our risk tolerance is when it comes to all of these things, right? And, you know, I know for us, it has gotten to the point where, regardless of the potential engagement with a client, I'm like, are they at a business maturity level at least at what I'm at? Or are they willing to take that journey with us, right?
Yeah.
So and because that's really kind of what it boils down to for me these days when it comes to risk and clients is, are they at least where we are, or yeah, even surpassed where we are from a business maturity level, or are they willing to take the journey? If they're willing to take the journey, that's awesome, because yep, that means that they're gonna have budgets and things of that nature where we can go and we can bring them along where they need to be. And I am perfectly willing to go into a company that doesn't have that maturity and help them get there. I think that's all of our responsibilities to do that, as long as they're willing to do it. If they're not, then I'm probably not going to take them on. And you try and get that engagement.
The fire out of the don't way hire. Front.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so exactly. Let me ask you a question within that sort of picture. That's like with an X. It's a spelling challenge. So it raises a question for me, though, when I think about security as a baseline versus security as a, you know, thinking about the risk model and going, okay, let's just say the baseline is on your line card, we'll just call it bronze, silver, gold, just for fun. So in the bronze security baseline package, and I don't know that we look at it this way, but your security your risk posture has been reduced to X. So based on an impact, if the security services are effectively in place on this bronze package, you know, what does that security baseline look like from a tolerance standpoint? And then kind of move your way across, because while I don't necessarily agree with the model of bronze, silver, gold, and the traditional, like, we sell you these services, the all you can eat, the, you know, a la carte, whatever it is, I'm not trying to make this about what your business strategy is, but thinking about it from a risk perspective, I think we spend a lot of time and energy trying to get a complete security stack that, if everybody had this, boy, that'd make my life easier, because then I can ensure that security, we've got a reduction of risk that's down to, like, let's just say it's below 10%. But what does that do to some of those clients that we're working with, assuming they all can afford it, when we've compressed down so hard their productivity and efficiency with things like two-factor authentication? Because we could just say it's inconvenient, but we know that it's more than an inconvenience.
Sure.
Or apps that are shadow IT, but we, by our very nature, enable them because we've taken away so many privileges on other applications that they're looking for ways to still get the job done without having to go and get approval, without going to the third party. Am I crazy in thinking that there's some sort of balancing act that allows us to stop focusing on get everybody to the best of the best package versus talking to them about, hey, our goal is to get your risk of negative impact down to 30%. That's this package or whatever it is. Maybe it's only 60%. And if you show it to them as a risk model across the tiers of services that you provide, does it change the way of thinking when you look at those versus one costs $1,000 a month, the next one up is $2,500, and then the next one up is $5,000. And if you show me that my probability of risk from the bottom one to the top one only changed by 10%, well, I wouldn't buy my own product.
You know, I think a lot of it is going to come down to the mindset change in how we engage with our customers to begin with. And as you know, I mean, I'm the type of guy that if I see something, I'm going to roll it out regardless of whether or not my clients are paying for it yet or not. And the reason behind that is mostly because I really want standardization across, you know, to keep my efficiencies where they need to be. It goes beyond just the security aspect. And I think, you know, when we get into the tiered levels of how all that goes, I think it's going to be less about what tools we're using and what stack we're providing, as opposed to this right here, the conversations that we're having and the time that it takes to have those conversations and the time that goes into the consulting aspect of what we're doing, not necessarily from a technology perspective, but just a business conversation. I mean, we talk about this stuff in peer groups all the time about changing the dynamics of our conversation from what we do for you every month and how many hours we put in and all this other kind of stuff to, you know, what do you have on your horizon? What are your goals for your business? How much business are you wanting to close? And let's talk about how we can help you get there, utilizing the technology that you have or other things that might be out there to assist you while protecting you and giving you the freedom to act and move about this, you know, goal all at the same time. So do you think
then you have to look at this through a lens of your baseline model, whether you have tiers or not? Maybe it's just the service package that you offer. I feel like we're going down the path, as you talked about, efficiencies, whether it's security or not, that makes it so that, quite honestly, at the end of the day, the margin of profitability, you don't want it to shrink because that makes it harder to grow your business, pay your staff well, you know, the vicious cycle. So do you look at risk then through the lens of, and we'll just expand it out to clients, not just internally, but to... and Pradham had this publication that came out that was like 10 most common risks that are out there that, you know, that we face. And one of them was like no governing policies and procedures. We obviously know that that's a really bad thing to be missing out. But it had a couple others that I think were interesting because I think this matters a lot in our space. Inadequate patch management, inadequate access controls. No incident response plan. And they separated that out from business continuity and disaster recovery plan. Do you have some sort of similar model that you step through and say, hey, doing my research, whether it's Pradham or Cisco or whoever publishes Verizon report, CompTIA's got a few, right? Like, how do I know if at the very least I'm looking at top 10 or top 20 most common risks that I know we are going to face day in and day out, people, that's a tough one, to come up with a strategy that goes back to what you said before, that it makes it less about product, it makes it less about the technology stack per se, and it looks at it more through the lens of what are we trying to accomplish, because you can't boil the ocean. And every time I hear a solution provider say, oh, well, this company is lower cost as all these things. Okay, great. Why are you going with that vendor? Like, we've said this before, and you know I have shiny object syndrome. Being told that a product does something doesn't necessarily mean I need that product. And more importantly, it might not be reducing any of the risks I'm trying to solve for by by buying that product. Now, what am I compromising? Yeah, let's just say it's important. But what am I compromising? Because I can't afford to reduce all of those risks. I actually have to pick and prioritize where to start, because we know at the end of the day, you're not buying all of the products and services and hiring people to solve these problems, because you're gonna run out of numbers for the number of risks that are available to solve for.
Sure. Yeah, I think that, you know, the overwhelming thing about risk is that it's all encompassing, right? It is not just, you know, A, B, and C. It's the entire alphabet when it comes right. to your business and your client's business, right? So first off, I think you have to break it down and identify what you're trying to measure the risk on, right? So defining your scope of what you're trying to measure risk. If you're trying to measure risk on vendors, work through vendor management risk assessments, right? If you're trying to do it on your service delivery, well, then focus on your service delivery. If you're trying to do it on your network or your client's network, focus on the network. If you're doing endpoints, you have to break it down and segment it out so that you can then bring it all together at the end and say, you know, these are where they're at. But defining the scope, I mean, that's number one for me. Then identifying the threats within that scope, right? What exactly is open for risk? Ensuring that we implement the right controls to mitigate the risk.
Right. And right? Not necessarily implement the controls, just to implement them, right?
Right. Implement the controls. And then analyze the likelihood of a threat and the impact if it were to occur. So those are kind of the four areas that I kind of focus in on to simplify it down. That's really, and it goes across all of those segments of risk. And so I didn't make that up. I found that someplace, and, you know, but that really kind of broke it down for me, because I am a big picture kind of person. And even though I know there's a lot of details involved in that, I think that really breaks it down into four steps that we can all understand to say, Okay, I'm going to analyze my network, right? I'm going to assess the risk of my network. Okay. You've identified the scope.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, now let's identify the threats. So you're going to run some kind of vulnerability scan to look at your stuff. You're going to look at best practices for, you know, network setups and things of that nature, and analyze what you're doing, right? Then you're going to implement the controls that you need to match those best practices. So three is taking action, implementing the controls, right? And then analyze the likelihood of a threat after that's done, and whether or not you're going to accept that risk or not. You're either, you know, and if you're not, well, then go back to number two and look at what's left. And, you know, until you can really sleep at night knowing that you've accepted that risk. So, I mean,
it's kind of interesting what you said about, you basically were breaking down the sort of the different domains, like infrastructure, management, operations, as, and maybe I almost went too far in narrowing it down to only three, but I mean, you could say, you know, physical and administrative and technical. I mean, there's lots of ways we go back down the rabbit hole of, there's many different ways to approach risk. One of the things that I think is interesting that is really challenging, this came out of a recent CompTIA risk management report, and it was talking about what is information technology risk management, and it kind of steps through like how to build out a risk management plan, but more specific to just cybersecurity. Like it was really like really narrowing it down. And what I found that was really interesting within that is, if we go back to like 2010, maybe even a little bit earlier, even through 2013, 2014. So 2010 through 2014, we'll say in that range, infrastructure and cybersecurity were kind of just included, right? Like if you were a sysadmin, whether you called it cybersecurity or not, you were working in that space. You know, hey, I set up your user profile. Here's your credentials. Oh, by the way, you got to change your password. You know, it has to be 8 characters and you can't have your name. Your username can't be part of your password. What was interesting is, so that was like team one, like, which is what most MSPs are, right? They're a team of one, smaller MSPs especially. And then it talked about, as you get into like 2015 and into more recent, say even I'd go all the way up through like 2019 or so. And it talks about now separating those into two very separate teams, infrastructure and cybersecurity. Those are two separate things. So your sysadmin, but as it was presenting it, it was kind of doing it in a Venn diagram. So there's a little bit of association where there's some overlaps where these two teams obviously have to work together. And then going into, say, present, we now have not two teams, but three teams, because cybersecurity operations is now separate from cybersecurity management. And what was really interesting to me about that is, you know, besides I kind of drooled over the illustration, I love, you know, shiny pictures. It reinforced for me, as we're talking about risk, and if you're listening to this, I hope this resonates with you. This is not something that you just do overnight. This is not something that you just go walk into the office tomorrow and tell your staff and go, oh, by the way, we're going to take risk seriously now, more so than we already were. And we're going to approach it through, we're going to do a risk assessment. We're coming up with a mitigation plan. And hey, Jim, you're responsible for our incident response plan. Could you have that on my desk by Friday? Like, this is a lot to chew on and digest. But I think, to your point, it's when you started going down the path of using a framework or even answering a questionnaire for cybersecurity insurance, you started recognizing really quickly that there is a path forward to mitigating risk that would have a serious negative impact on your company. But until you walk down the path of actually doing it, you either have paralysis analysis to it, you assume the tool water at, or number three, you do nothing at all because you've got paralysis analysis.
Yeah. I mean, I know for me, and I think that there are a lot of business owners in our industry that are like me, that, you know, it's like, they're not disciplined in, you know, I mean, it's like, they ultimately know that they're accountable for the things. And it's like, if it doesn't resonate with them, or if it's like, you know, I'm just worried about getting the job done, making sure money's coming in, making sure I can pay my people. And those are all real problems that we all face. So I know that I'm undisciplined in certain areas. And I knew that in order for me to go down this path, that it was going to cost me some money, right? I was going to have to shell it out, because somebody was going to have to hold me accountable.
Yeah.
If I'm spending money on it, you can damn sure know that I'm going to get it done.
That's okay, the do it for you, do it with you, or do it yourself.
Right.
And you fall into the category of do it together.
That's right. So, you know, I know guys, you know, and we both know guys that are really disciplined and have been able to get really, really deep into this stuff without outside help. And I they're like heroes to me, because they, you know, it's like, man, more power to you.
But it's not just you, Jim. Like, it's not just because of your personality type. I think we're getting into what I would call process maturity, right? So like, we're not taught through school to be process oriented. I think if you go through the military or some of these other, you know, training programs, I think obviously, you know, that consistency, the follow the cadence, lunch is at 8:15 or 12:15. I just picked a random number there. Maybe you need to eat lunch at 8:15. I don't know. But I saw this Venn diagram that also went along with it from CompTIA again. And it was, so this was just the two circles with overlap, and it had, regulations and compliance is one of the circles, and then risk internal and external is the other circle, and their juncture, or their overlap where the circles are, you know, cross each other, is process maturity. And that really resonated with me, because it's not hard to find tools and services to reduce, mitigate completely, however you want to approach this with regards to risk. But what is difficult is to do it in such a way that's repeatable, that goes from reactive to proactive. If you don't use something like, you know, regulation helps, right? That's why regulation exists, is because people struggle with the maturity of process. So you put a regulation in play and a roadmap with a framework, and all of a sudden you have people that used to not be able to tie their own shoes and largely shopped for Velcro. are now actually working their way through and adhering to compliance. So I have to think that we're all capable of learning and becoming mature in that process, becoming mature in our approach. But I think largely to your point, and it's not always a spend, right? Like once you went through it and you got taught the skills, now it's becoming entrenched in your mindset, in your company mindset, that culture change that really reinforces the difference between you and the solution provider down the street who's like, CIS, why would I need to do that? Like we've got RMM tools that do it for us.
Well, I kind of liken it to a lot of it, you know, I mean, a lot of folks in our, you know, circle of folks are doing like
circle EOS. Of trust.
Yeah. Our, you know, our sphere of influence. They're, you know, implementing like EOS, the entrepreneurial operating yep. system, right? I've read the books and but I think that
Traction, if anybody's listening, if
that's it, right.
If, yeah.
You know, a little plug for those folks. But I mean, they're great books, but I know having read the books and now having gone through the, you know, the SOC 2 process, that there is a lot of that stuff from a just an organizational governance kind of thing that is just really built into all of that to make it happen. And I'm like, if folks that are hiring implementers to do EOS, right, because they need that, right? Yeah. And it's very possible once they've done that now they can get through this, right? And one of the folks that we know did that. They hired an implementer for that. And that's why it's making it so easy for them to implement a lot of the controls, because they've brought in that discipline and that routine and the processes and procedures that are necessary to execute this stuff. So it's a big task, and it's an ongoing one. It's not a one time you're done. You got to keep up with it, and you got to regularly continue doing it. I mean, we look at risk pretty much on a monthly basis in our company. Not all at the same time,
sure.
But you know, we're like, you know, targeting different things and kind of cycling through it. And if there's something at the top of the list, we'll hit that, even if it's the same thing we talked about the month before. You know, it really just kind of depends on what the hot topic is. If there's not one, then we, you know, cycle it back down to the next one. So,
well, I think that's an important way to look at this. As you mature, the number of risks that you're looking at month to month will go down. Like it's not a, this isn't like you're trying to cut down a forest of trees, right? Maybe you are initially, but eventually you're going to have a pretty big open area and there's only going to be a handful of trees, right? Like that's just the nature of never addressing risk is like trying to have a garden and then never weeding it.
Right.
Right. Like if you maintain it, you're not looking at tons of risk on a regular basis because it's been maintained. You know, as we wrap this up, I just want to make sure that everybody that's listening, if you are a member of MSP Ignite, we do have a Secure Outcomes Town Hall next week, and it is very much focused on proactive, reactive risk and how to sort of come up with, you know, some steps to address that, how to, you know, maybe get on the path of doing a risk assessment if you haven't done one. As always, Jim, thanks for joining me. And for those of you listening, have a great week. Thank you.